Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, greetings and welcome inside the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Yo!
As we count down to the United States and Iran. Just a couple hours from now, the United States 40-point favorites. Will they win? Will they all want to beat up Greg Popovich after the game if they lose? It is a big, big night here on the show with live big-time Olympics that everybody cares about going on throughout the night tonight. It is a big, big night for us, Mike Harmon.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Action all the way through the night. I'm still recovering from, staying up and watching soccer. Because I'm a dope, instead of hitting a record button and waiting. And then Smith, staying up past 3 a.m. to see a 0-0 draw.
Yes, there you go. I was going to say, how many goals did you see in that game, Mike Harmon? I saw zero.
I saw one taken off the board on a dubious offsides goal. But beyond that, what did I just do?
So, man.
Yeah, needless to say, a little extra octane coffee going on and ready for a big Tuesday night.
And I'll tell you, listen, just in right now with the Olympics, Katie Ledecky did not medal. She finished fifth in the 200 freestyle. Once again, Ariana Titmus, the Terminator, takes her second gold medal, beating Katie Ledecky. This time, Ledecky finishes outside of the medal count. And look, before we get into Simone Biles, you know, the Olympics is fun. It's been great. I mean, we're just starting out. It has been a disaster for the United States so far. All the big high-profile athletes have been upset. They're not winning. Katie Ledecky not winning. USA softball loses a gold medal game. Simone Biles withdraws and now is the biggest story in the world. The women's national team in soccer won 1-1 in pool play. The men's basketball team may not win again. I mean, it has been an absolute disaster for all the high-profile athletes coming into the games. Look, and you go out with Sha'Carri Richardson, who wasn't going to compete at all because of the positive marijuana test. And of all the big athletes, say, tune in and watch. Naomi Osaka, everything else. It has been an absolute disaster because it's not like we're not winning medals because we're winning, but all the stars, hey, get to the TV, stream K. Okay, Ledecky, now she's lost twice. And now we're not seeing any of the favorites who should be winning playing well at all. And it's kind of embarrassing. You know, the only question is this a blip or is this the new normal? Right? Because is the Olympics kind of a metaphor for a larger image of the United States losing its world standing, right? Because the past few years, we've seen other countries pass us in technology, environmentally, economically, but now athletically is when people stand up and go, whoa, we're not winning gold medals. What is going on here? This is what's going to gain everybody's attention. Oh, you know, China's passing us. They're passing us in technology. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, environmentally, yeah, whatever. They'll figure stuff out up in Norway. Wait. We're losing to other teams in basketball and soccer and the swim. Wait. What's happening here? I don't know. It kind of feels like this has been where the United States has been going. The past. Other countries have been surpassing us. But now that it's happening in athletics, everybody's standing up and going, wait a minute. Why is this happening? What's wrong with the United States? We got to fix this.
Well, what's the one thing that unites us all? Sports. Right? There are USA Olympians. That's why this Simone Biles has become such a hot button issue, because it's not just about wins, losses, and medals. It's you're representing all of us. And look what happens. So, you know, it's that level of fandom and ownership that you have on a regional basis, on a market-to-market basis, taken out to the national side. Because all the things you marked in terms of things being ticked off and passed. And we can go through the world rankings on all of those another time, podcast that will never be done. But you can go through and talk about those being really divisive issues, right? You're not going to get people on the same page for environmental concerns necessarily, especially when there are billions upon billions of dollars at stake, and just keep on going on down the line. Now, when it comes to getting some chunks of metal and hearing the national anthem and celebrating that, now everybody's on board. Everybody wants to see that. And right now, the medal count is still United States in the league. China second at 23, Japan, the host country, at 19. The one that I think has everybody just kind of circling and going, how does this make sense, is the collection of Russian athletes that are there unofficially, not with a, you know, an actual nation, but as this collection of athletes. They're fourth right now, with seven gold, seven silvers, and four bronze. So there's just a lot of hand raising going, all right, how does this all make sense in terms of still being eligible to be here? But that's, you know, a philosophical debate for another time. To your point, we still have another couple of weeks. We still have a lot of big events to come. And the U.S., even though I didn't get any sleep and they didn't score any goals, they're into the medal round. So there's still potential greatness ahead.
We're 1-1-1. What does that mean? We were average, but we moved on.
We moved on. Hey, succeed and proceed, buddy. It doesn't have to be pretty, because I don't know if you went back and watched the match. For those that didn't, it wasn't a strong showing in any way, shape,
no,
or form.
No, they decided we're going to put 11 people in the box and we're not going to allow a goal, because if we don't allow a goal, we move on. This is what we're going to do. Oh, it's very, very frustrating. It's probably good that a lot of these events are on delay or on streaming, where it's like, oh, I've missed all the bad things. I've missed all the time.
And you can check the result and go back and say, will I be excited to watch this or not? All right, hit play. If not, bring me the latest episode of whatever I'm binge watching.
But clearly the story of the day is Simone Biles, and boy, is this just an inflammatory topic that everywhere you go, you find temperatures get to 100 on this right away. Now, obviously, Simone Biles, what you probably woke up to reading about earlier in the day, Simone Biles pulls out of the gymnastics team final, the greatest gymnast of all time, pulls out after a bad vault, which she had lost her confidence afterwards and said she couldn't go on. She couldn't continue. She pulls out. They wind up trying to figure it out without her. They wind up with the silver medal. The Russian Olympic team winds up winning first. Here's Simone Biles following the event, talking about why she pulled out, what happened, why she stopped competing. And then we'll take a deep dive into stuff I guarantee takes you haven't heard all day on this. Let's hear from Simone Biles.
I've just never felt like this going into a competition before, and I tried to go out here and have fun and warm up in the back, went a little bit better, but then once I came out here, I was like, no, mental is not there, so I just need to let the girls do it and focus on myself. No injury, thankfully, and that's why I took a step back, because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured, so I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in.
So there's Simone Biles in her post-match presser earlier today. And the first thing, that there's a lot of shocking things with this, because when I saw this, when I woke up, I said, you got to be kidding me. You have to, and I was, and not a lot shocks me. Look, you and I have been doing sports, been doing this for a long time. Not a lot shocks me, but Simone Biles, she walks around with a goat emblem on her leotard. Okay, yeah. The greatest gymnast of all time couldn't do it mentally. She wasn't there after she had a bad vault. And she talked about how the pressures of the past week have gotten to her. Now, first things first, because there's a lot of different ways to get with this. There's a lot of surprising things, but her pulling out after that is not surprising. And if you think about it a little bit deeper, you understand that stuff like this happens in sports all the time, right? All the time we see this happen. You see it in the NBA Finals when Devin Booker can't stop fouling people. And so Monty Williams has to say, dude, you have to sit down for 5 minutes because you're insane right now. And what happens? He sits down, he collects himself, and goes back in the game. This happens everywhere where players mentally are out of it for whatever reason. So what happens is they sit down for a few minutes. In the NFL, they come out of the game. In the NBA, they come out of the game. It happens that way. That's how it goes. You ready to go back in? Ready to go back in. I say Devin Booker, because we just watched him be someone who couldn't control his emotions in the NBA Finals, and he was the biggest example of it. This happens all the time. Now, this happened today, and yeah, okay, does it suck that it happened in the Olympics, what she's been training her whole life for, continuing on, and other people have? Yeah, it sucked, but it happened. It was the right decision for her to pull out and for the coaches to go with other people, because if you're not mentally there, you're not going to help the team. And if she wasn't there mentally after her bad vault and didn't feel what, for whatever reason, she didn't have it there, that was the right call, because she's not going to help the team going out there, just like Devin Booker's not going to help the team going out there fouling players. Anybody who is not mentally in the game needs to come out and needs some time to get back in. The way gymnastics is, okay, well, it's time for you to go. I need to sit for 10 minutes. Well, we're not going to sit and wait for you. Somebody else has to take your place, and that's exactly what happened. So this part of it was not surprising. I'm mentally not there. I can't do it. Because if she went out there after, if she, look, the vault is one of her strongest things, and she had a bad time in the air and landing, what was she going to do? I mean, she had the lowest score on the vault. She's going to go out there again, and that would pull the team down entirely. They made the right call going away, and she made the right call saying, I can't do it. It's shocking, and it's stunning, because she's the, you never think of someone like Tom Brady saying, hey, I need some time. I got to come out of the game here. You don't, but this is how it works in sports. We just saw it work with Booker and other players. You see it all the time. This part of it was not shocking. Once it was, I can't do it, I'm mentally not there, sit down. You know, at every level of sports, it's you're not into it right now. You got to sit down. Whether it is the Olympics, whether you're coaching a U-12 soccer game and one of the girls just isn't into it because she had a sleepover at her friend's last night and so she's not running. You know what? You're going to sit for a few minutes. I mean, this is not the shocking part. This is the right call to make. USA still almost pulled it off. I completely get it. This part is not shocking.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack as we go throughout the night. So I've got notes all over. I thought about this in a million different ways and really did my best to stay away from the cesspool that is social media as this started to spawn over the course of the day. One of the things, as you mentioned, hers was the low score, dragging them down. Here was an opportunity for coaches to just say, you know what? I could see she wasn't there. Like, could have gotten a huge win here because that strategy ended up getting them a silver medal by her stepping out, right? If she'd gone and replicated her first effort, they would have probably not medaled. So from just a strategic standpoint and for claiming the piece of metal for this particular event, it was helpful. But, yeah, it's really just that larger discussion of tapping out for a moment, knowing there's still time left to come back in and make your mark. And for her, there's still all the individual events versus this point in time as a team sport. And I think that's where a lot of the rage and examples and everything started to flow, right? You used the Devin Booker because we talked about that a lot in the finals, where if his shot wasn't falling, then he got called for a ticky-tack foul because he thought he got should have gotten one on the other end. What did he do? He got that, you know, eye of the burning sensation in his eyes, like got flaming red, and he was going to hit whoever came into the lane next against him, kind of thing. It's like, all right, you're not helping us. Now you're just picking up fouls, and this is going to come back to bite us. So you can buy a few minutes there. With this, you can't. So it's an in-the-moment decision that has such huge, huge ramifications. And I know I've probably seen the embroidered goat every fifth post since I sat down in this chair 45 minutes ago. It's like, wow, this is really, people are really mad.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a hug. I've got some other explanations. You referenced, you know, coaching 12-year-old girls. I got a bigger point to make with that. Academics, bring my house into it and try to make it a little more digestible for folks than Olympic athletes. Because I think maybe the largesse of that is getting people a little out of their element, out of their sorts. And I'm not talking about those that are fat shaming radio hosts and TV hosts and whatever else. You guys weren't Olympians either, so shut up. And if you were in a little bit better shape or depending on what your career was, that's all fine and good. But dismissing people's opinions when it comes to handling stress and navigating their lives is also a disingenuous, dangerous way for us to go about discussing this topic as well. Should be inclusive, should be a larger focus and reminder that we need to make an avenue for this to become part of your training as you're growing up, as you're producing great performances, etc. For today, stunning, but they got a silver medal, and really, you at the end of the day, all you're hoping is she's okay and will continue. It takes nothing away from any of the past accomplishments, as many would like to, you know, change her Wikipedia page and suddenly erase everything.
Yeah, look, she didn't win, right? She didn't win, and it's shocking, and it's hard to digest just because she's a great athlete. Look, what have I said over the course of the past couple of months? The two athletes dominating their sports more than anybody else are Jacob DeGrom and Simone Biles, right?
Look,
we've said that a bunch of times. Nobody has been more dominant in their sports than DeGrom and Simone Biles. And to see this, wait a minute, you're withdrawing in the Olympics, you're doing this? It's a shocking thing. But when you think of how this was handled from a sports perspective, yeah, we see this. You know, if a great defensive back commits back-to-back pass interference penalties and screaming at the referee, what happens? He comes out and sits out the rest of that drive. Why? Because mentally you're not in the game. Come out and sit down. Come out and sit down and be ready to go next time, because you got to clear your head and you got to move on. But the way the game goes is, okay, you get a chance to go back in an NFL or an NBA game. Once your turn comes up in gymnastics, that's it. You know, you can't do it. Look, I can't mentally, I'm not ready to go back out there and do it. Now, they're different sports, but the philosophy is the same of, if there's an athlete who's not mentally in it, you got to take them out. And it was good that she did it herself. It was good the coaches were okay with it. They made the decision very quickly. All right, right. The one gymnast who said, I can't do it, she went and got her grips, put them on, I'm ready to go. Ready to go and go out and go out and do this.
Well,
so
next
for
man
that
up.
Part of it, that's not the shocking part. Now, there's other shocking parts to it, but that's not the shocking one. This is just how it works. And I'm sorry, Devin Booker, we keep using you, but that you're the big example of sports the past couple weeks of guys controlling your emotions, being able to perform on the court.
Yeah, we can go and find plenty of other examples as the night goes on. But in the end, next woman up, and they finish with the silver medal. So much more to unpack on this, but off the outset, just folks, calm down a little bit. You know, find a deep breath and relax. It's going to be okay.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. We'll have more on the Olympics and more on Simone Biles.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us now on the hotline as we are moving towards the MLB trade deadline, MLB Network insider, Fox Sports Radio insider. He's been able to put the Stanley Cup playoffs to bed and concentrate on what is happening and what will happen in the next couple of days. It is John Paul Morosi. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. JP, what's happening, buddy?
Jason and Mike, my friends, it is a wonderful week on the sports calendar. One of my very favorites. Yes, the trade deadline is upon us, and it's arriving 1 year or 1 day earlier than usual this year. So I'm very excited for July the 30th, 4 p.m. Eastern time.
All right, so looking ahead, clearly there's one name that stands out above all else right now, and that's Max Scherzer. We've heard reports today that the three teams on the West Coast are going to be the favorites, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres. The Mets wanted to get in, but really they're not going to trade him within the division, and Scherzer might not want to go there. When it comes down to it, Max Scherzer is going to get dealt. I can't see it being anybody but the Dodgers. They have the what they need. They have the cachet to make it done. They have the biggest need. They have their best position for winning now and for the next 2 or 3 years. Am I crazy, or do you see Scherzer going someplace else?
I do think the Dodgers have the edge here, Jason, that they have a really good base of prospects to trade from, a very clear need in their rotation for him right now. So need, prospects, I get it, makes sense. And yet, the Nationals have to make the best deal from their perspective, too. And that's why I would not totally rule out the possibility of the Giants. The Giants would like to get Max Scherzer as well. And they do have a young catching prospect by the name of Joey Bart, who they could potentially put in that trade if they get enough back in the deal to justify that cost. Now, Bart, for me, is someone that you would only give up if it's more than a rental. You would not give up the number 2 overall pick in the draft from 2018 for a rental. So if it's Max Scherzer plus probably not Trey Turner, but Max Scherzer plus a reliever, Max Scherzer plus another bat potentially, then it starts to make more and more sense. But I really think the Giants are a team that we should not overlook, and the Padres have a tremendous amount of minor league depth as well to trade from. It's interesting to me, too, guys, in reading the report on Max's desire to go to the West Coast, which I think is legitimate. I can understand why he has made that statement and why that's his position. I don't think he wants to go within the NL East and pitch against the Nationals for a division rival. Max is very wise about his legacy and the way that his career has unfolded. I think he wants the Nationals to be the East Coast part of his legacy. He already has the Tigers as the Midwest part of his legacy. And I think that if he goes out and wins a World Series for the Dodgers or for the Padres or for the Giants, I think Nationals fans would say, hey, if we're not going to make the playoffs, Max, go get one more ring, all the power to you. It's different if he's playing for the Phillies or the Mets. It's a fundamentally different thing. Jason and Mike, you both know that. And I think, too, that it also probably allows him, from Max's standpoint, if he goes and gets traded out to the West Coast, to almost shop a little bit for what that would be like as a free agent destination. Go to L.A., go to San Diego, go to San Francisco, explore a little bit, evaluate, see if you want to go there as a free agent. It really allows them to gather more information. So I think that's a really nice play for Max if he ends up going to the West Coast.
Three of the most expensive places to move in our country. Hi, JP.
Sources confirm that's also true. Yes.
That is absolutely true. So 9 games over .500, a series in progress against the Houston Astros, yet the Mariners send a couple of right-handed relievers to the Astros, incensing guys in the clubhouse. How do you appease them? You just give them a bunch of Kraken season tickets or what?
Well, Kraken season tickets are very much in demand. I will say that. I was enthused by their expansion draft last week as well. So, yes, while the Kraken are a very hot ticket, I do not think that Kraken season tickets by themselves would be enough to allay the concerns of the Mariner players who were, by some accounts, according to the Seattle Times, using the word betrayed and how they felt today. That's a very strong word for a team this close to the trade deadline. It only makes sense giving up your closer to the team you're chasing in the division if you have other big plans coming and other big acquisitions on the way. And if that's the case, then maybe this will make sense. But I think Jerry DePoto and his team may have perhaps not given enough credence to the importance that Kendall Graveman has had in that clubhouse this year. You really got the sense in the aftermath of this deal just how revered he is as a veteran player. And I'm not so sure, guys, that the Mariners brass really understood that before this trade. And perhaps that's a consequence of maybe not being around the players as much these days and not being in the clubhouse as often due to the various COVID protocols that exist in our world right now. But to me, it was a real wake-up call to Jerry DePoto, it should be, that clubhouse now is expecting that there has to be some other huge move coming this week. Otherwise, what happened today just simply does not make sense for a team that was really building a lot of positive momentum here in recent days.
Quote, "He hasn't come down here," a player said of Jerry DePoto. "He sits up in his suite playing fantasy baseball and rips apart our team without telling us anything. I'm just picturing him watching Moneyball over and over again, trying to have the Brad Pitt lines that he can just deliver. Guys, if you don't give me the answer, I'm going to point to Pete again." And yes, that's right. Really, I mean, it really fails to make sense.
And by the way, tonight, right now, as we speak, top of the fourth, Astros 7, Mariners 2.
Disaster. And losing a clubhouse that's – you're actually competitive for the first time in a while here,
right,
JP. First time these guys are feeling it, right? It's one of those things. It's kind of like in San Diego. They're making moves, being aggressive, and then someone asks Eric Hosmer, will you be disappointed if you get shuffled off, which is a fair question, and he gets mad. But same thing, that feeling of betrayal of, hey, we put in a lot of work here. Help me out.
Right. No, that's a very fair point. And to me, when you've got a team that has the longest playoff drought in major North American pro sports, and you are just now starting to build some momentum, this is a puzzling move. It's a puzzling move. And it's also coming at a time, by the way, when the Mariners are, they just this week actually announced the hiring of a new president of business operations, and we don't know what their plans are for the offseason, if they're going to pursue a new president of baseball operations, what they want to do. But this is not the last impression that you want to leave on the front office at a time of changeover for that organization. Jerry now has to make a big move. He has to do something that earns him back some trust and some confidence on the part of those players, because if he does not, then it's going to be a really, really difficult offseason, given all the positive momentum that was built before today, and now all of a sudden very much in question right now at the trade deadline.
John Paul Morosi, our guest, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. All right, as we get close to it, JP, we've talked about this in recent weeks. A few weeks ago, I told you this is going to wind up being an insane deadline. You're going to see teams try to make up for the lack of making moves last year. You're going to see big names go everywhere. Are you still feeling that, still hearing that? The next couple of days, we're going to see tons and tons of moves, and it's going to be one of those frenetic deadlines?
I think so, and we've already seen some movement. Who knows, of course, if Trey Turner will be moved this week. Of course, it looked like tonight there was a moment where he was pulled from the game. We thought that maybe it was a trade. Instead, reportedly, he has tested positive for COVID-19, so that's its own story there with Trey Turner and the Nationals. But I do think, because of the number of deals that did not happen maybe last year, I think it's a great point that you make, and during the course of the offseason, and also teams that are now motivated to sell and really get their rebuilds moving. The Cubs are one of them, and mm-hmm. they have Bryant, Rizzo, Kimbrel, Baez to move, potentially Zach Davies as well. I would doubt Kyle Hendricks. The Nationals now with Turner, with Scherzer, some big-name players who are out there and available. The Texas Rangers, they've been stuck in the middle for far too long. Maybe now is the time that they end up moving Joey Gallo. So I think what I would say in general terms is, whereas past years you would hear teams saying, hey, no, this player is off limits, we cannot possibly move him, no discussion whatsoever, speaking a little bit of Whit Merrifield with Kansas City, it's a different tenor right now. There is a much greater willingness to be active at the deadline. And so, guys, I'm expecting to not sleep a lot. I'm expecting to have a lot of fun conversations, and I'm expecting to be having a lot of deals cross our desks in the days to come. And if there's a big deal Friday at the deadline, give me a call. We'll break it down that night.
Yeah, Frostberg just gave me an electro zap because he said it was too much Mariners talk. So let's get people excited. The Yankees, they're still creeping around. Judge coming back. What do they have in the minor leagues to give? Can they just sell the idea of, here's some old memorabilia of championship teams that we'll give you for your display cases, because we may not have the prospects to turn over?
Well, that you said it, Mike. And here's the sobering reality for the Yankees, that entering today, Joey Gallo himself with 24 had more home runs than all left-handed batters for the Yankees this year combined. 24 for Gallo, 22 for all lefties with the Yankees.
That's a sin. That's a sin, man, in that ballpark.
Come
on.
This is the franchise of Don Mattingly, Reggie Jackson, the left-handed half of Mickey Mantle. You go back to Ruth and Gehrig. This is a franchise that has built its identity on left-handed slug, and they have no left-handed slug. They have to address this right now in a pretty profound way. Joey Gallo, I think, would make a ton of sense. I also think Max Kepler. Max Kepler is a sneaky trade candidate right now. He's always reminded me of Paul O'Neill. I think he'd be great in the stripes. Maybe you have some of that same fire that we saw with Paul O'Neill. So I would say Max Kepler or Joey Gallo should be a Yankee by 4 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. But to your point, Mike, perhaps the prospect base that we were hearing about for years is not quite as impressive as we were led to believe. That sometimes does happen with large market prospect bases, and that may have happened with this particular group of young Yankees.
All right, JP, if we threw out Max Scherzer at the beginning, let's close with this. If I said to you, give me two big names that you would not be surprised to be dealt by the deadline of four. Big names on the Max Scherzer type level. Mm. What names you're giving me? And they don't have to go to the Mets. They could go any place. I mean, I'd like them to go there, but they could go any place. What names you giving me?
This is not a Mets-specific conversation, stunningly. I would say this. Among the controllable starting pitchers, right-hander Jose Berrios of the Minnesota Twins. He is an outstanding arm, controllable through the end of next year. I think Jose Berrios is likely to be moved. And then I really believe that when you look at other options right now, I mean, Chris Bryant, he'll move. He's a huge name. And then I would also add this. With Kansas City, Whit Merrifield, there's a better chance of him moving than at any point in time in the last couple of years. I know he's not maybe necessarily the biggest name, but he's a huge name in the industry. So I think Merrifield moves, at least potentially. Craig Kimbrell's going to move. Bryant's going to move. Max Scherzer's going to move. That's a pretty good list of guys that I've just given you right there. And Starling Marte as well in Miami, he'll move too. Joey Gallo, that's a pretty good haul of names that I expect are going to get moved here in the days ahead.
You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That is at John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports Radio Insider. JP, as always, buddy, appreciate your time, my friend. And, hey, well, when the Mets make a big trade and they wind up getting somebody big, we'll call you back.
Call me back anytime. Yes. You got NHL, a free agency tomorrow. Where is Philip Deneau going to go? Where's Dougie Hamilton going to go? I'm thinking about that stuff in addition to the trade deadline. It's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. Can't wait.
Oh, we got Dougie Hamilton in. Thanks a bunch, buddy.
We'll see you, buddy.
He's a great defenseman. You bet.
He is.
We'll talk to you next time.
We'll get some more defense you are talking next time.
Defensure. Le Defensure de la Canadienne de Montréal, right? Yes. Well, we're ready for that. You got it.
Take it
Brilliant.
Easy, JP. You know, just think about that for a second. Like, you see Jerry DePoto for the Mariners, and what makes – and it's getting a big deal right now. You trade your closer, right, Kendall Graveman, and his ERA is under one. Guy's having a phenomenal year, right? You trade him, and trading him, I get it. You know, you feel – but you're finally feeling good. You had the biggest feel-good win of the year you're coming off, and you make a trade where you're basically saying we're waving the white flag – because we're going to trade our closer. And not only do you trade him when you're only five games back of the lead in the division, and you trade him to the team that you're chasing.
Yes.
I mean, really, I get exactly why the Mariners players are upset. Jerry DePoto doesn't come down here. He's playing fantasy baseball. You can make that trade without strengthening a team in your division. I mean, that's
plenty
an insane
of suitors,
move to make.
Plenty of people looking for arms this year, whether it's starting pitchers or more help in the pen. It's always there, but this year it is magnified because there's so many teams that are on the fringe of being would-be contenders. Right, where the addition of one guy could be the thing that sparks it. Just crazy to me. Just bad business. Bad business, man.
I don't get it. Another player reaction, quote, are you bleeping kidding me? It never changes. They don't care about winning. How do you trade him and say you care about winning? And you trade him to Houston? It never changes.
What do I think of his performance?
Are the Padres going to make a trade? Listen, we got to move somebody out because, you know, we made a couple of moves here. Oh, let's make a trade with the Dodgers. No, that's going to happen.
We're finally chasing them after all these years. Let's make a deal. Let's bolster their bullpen and give them an alternate to Kenley Jansen. Yes, let's do that.
The Yankees aren't going to say, you know, it's really time we move Aaron Judge. We'll get him at the high point now. We'll rebuild. We'll trade him to the Red Sox, and we'll get back what we get back for. That's not going to happen. How do you do that in your division? Look, I get that you're competing with everybody else, and, you know, if you're thinking wild card, you don't need to think your division. You want to catch. But you're only 5-6 games out. You're not 25 games out, right? You're not selling a guy at the end. You are competing, and you're sending a horrible message to your team. And you've strengthened a team that's directly in front of you. There's certain things you just don't do. Jerry DePoto played baseball for a long time, right before he became a GM. And I don't know the quicker way to get fired than this. You piss off all the players, right? And now you've lost their confidence, and now you watch what happens to the Mariners. If they wind up falling way out of contention, DePoto's going to be the guy to pay for it with his job. How can you walk down and say, yes, I just helped make us better?
Hey, we're winning now, right? You made a big deal. You got Jared Kelnick. Great. Awesome. Right? You can't live off that forever because Brody Van Wagner was just stupid. So we got to move on. No. What do you do? How did you make us better? How did you help us? You didn't. You traded away our clothes. We're playing well, finally. We had some rough points now, and now you've made a trade with a team directly in front of you. This just passes understanding. And I get John Paul today. There could be a bigger move coming later on this week, but you could have still made a bigger move and traded Kendall Graveman someplace else. All right? There's many other, as you said, there's many other people that we're looking for. You could have called the Dodgers and, hey, you sure about Kenley Jansen? How about Kendall Graveman? Give us a couple of guys. All right. You could have traded him anywhere. Anywhere, and you didn't. This, oh man, I'll tell you tonight. Even though the Mets got drilled, we're in first place. I'm glad I'm a Mets fan.
Yeah, I'm just gonna throw. And the White Sox got a home run. Welcome back, Eloy Jimenez. Arik on Twitter had this, and I have to agree with it. For all the Mariners players, all right, put your name on it. Tell Jerry how dissatisfied you are by standing in front of a microphone on it to make sure my hair's right and put it on out there. Don't do the anonymity thing. He needs to know that beyond the anonymous quotes, how egregious this error is in bullpen and team management.
I'd love it if it was Kelnick, who's been there for like 5 minutes and is hitting 105.
The you know, kid it never shows changes up here. And he's mad. Tell you, they told me when they drafted me, or when they acquired me, I should say. When they acquired me, this was going to be different. This was going to be a different thing. You know what? I'd rather be back in a Mets uniform.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If they fail to cover, does Greg Popovich make it to the end of the game? Joining us now on the hotline, covering the game at the Olympics, longtime NBA insider, covers the NBA nationally for the LA Times. Judging by his last tweet, he has gone from telling people he has met at the games that he's from Los Angeles to telling people he is Shohei Ohtani. It is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, what's happening, buddy?
They're like, where are you from? I just say, Shohei Ohtani, and I shrug my shoulders. Everybody goes, Shohei Ohtani.
Do you show them your batting stance and how you swing the bat? Great.
The worst habit I've developed is I try to all the obscure Japanese White Sox players from the mid 2000s. I do like I'm like Shingo Takatsu.
Okay. Sure.
Get a Gucci in there.
Yeah.
Tadahito Gucci.
Okay.
And I bow a little bit, and yeah, no, it's been fun. You do like people know LeBron James. People know Los Angeles Lakers. But they really know Shohei Ohtani.
No, sure. He got Shingo into the show. He wins.
Like, do you show them that, listen, like you can swing a bat and you can throw a ball? Like, is that like what you do to show them you show Ohtani? Look, I can swing. I can also throw.
I show them my slow pitch softball highlights from my South Bay co-ed league. But my team is very disappointed that I'm not there. They've crumbled around me. You know, that's the big difference between me and Ohtani is my team wins.
All right, so hey, look, here it's been, I mean, it's kind of weird because I don't know if there's a disconnect with how things are playing there with how things are playing here, but clearly look, the United States basketball team, look, for most of the star athletes that we've talked about coming to the games, whether it's the U.S. women's soccer team, USA basketball, Katie Ledecky up until an hour or so ago, you know, all the big favorites that we've been talking about have all really underachieved. It's been a disaster of an Olympics, and everybody here is incredibly nervous about the men's basketball team, and there's reports that some of the players aren't getting along with Greg Popovich. Is what we're hearing here in the United States the same kind of vibe that's around the team there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. They are they didn't look like a team that was having a lot of fun against France, really, ever. But it's also like that makes sort of perfect sense based on sort of the circumstances too, right? I thought, you know, Greg Popovich's sort of like post-game rants, the funniest thing that he said to me was he said that, like, you know, it's not like we're just going to roll the ball out there and win, when that is almost precisely the strategy when you have a quarter of your team playing in the NBA Finals, right? You don't replace them. Instead, you put them on a jet and you land them a day before the game and say, okay, go play, you know? And so viewing this as a team itself, like, does just seem, it seems like a little bit of a misnomer. Like, this is like a group of dudes right now playing against a bunch of teams. And Team USA is always sort of like that, but they normally have the talent gap, like truly the talent gap, like to make up for that stuff. This team is dealing with role definition. They're dealing with all this stuff. And then sort of the theory that I'll posit about just the Americans in general is that as a society, like, we don't do uncomfortable very well. And these are an uncomfortable games. You know, like, these are not the circumstances that anybody wants here. People aren't allowed to go and see places you live your life in a hotel and on a bus. You know, that's not a – I don't want to say, like, it's a soft quality or something like that. But, you know, especially when you hear things like Greg Popovich say, like, our players have sacrificed to be here. It's like, no, like, this should be a reward. And I do think that whatever happens in these games, I would guess that come Paris in 4 years – it'll be a much more energized Team USA program. These things sort of have a life cycle. You have the dream team, you have the redeem team, and then you'll have whatever happens in Paris. But, like, I think we slowly kind of the talent erodes away, the excitement for Team USA sort of erodes away, and that's where we're left, where you're losing to France to open the games.
Can you extend that, even though they're going to change the rule about, you know, leg extensions and fouls, that doesn't apply to FIBA rules? Can you be the guy to let them know that?
My favorite FIBA rule so far seems to be that to go, they review a lot of stuff and they make the refs walk into, like, the third row of the scorer's table to go review. That's my favorite FIBA rule so far. Is that because it's truly an international game because they make them cross, like, a border to get to the review table. No, like, I will say, like, there is very much, like, a no blood, no foul type of element to FIBA basketball that is, like, a major adjustment for people and for players. You see people get really, really frustrated with the physicality of it. You know, look, I don't know that the U.S. is going to win by 40. They should dominate this game. Obviously, they should dominate almost every game they play. But there is an adjustment to this style. There is an adjustment to kind of these rules and this format. And, you know, I mean, look, the U.S. should win gold. I won't be surprised if they don't. Just because, like I said, I mean, this thing kind of, it feels like it always sort of has a cycle. And it feels like we're on, like, the downturn of that.
Are the players, I mean, look, we know that they're all joining and they're, you know, they're trying to figure things out. Look, that transcontinental flight with Devin Booker and, mm-hmm. and Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton had to be off the hook. At this point, weird. Can you say they're comfortable enough with each other, or is it going to be they're going to continue to try to figure out and gel and get their chemistry as the games go on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is. This is going to be a tournament long process, right? That, like, there are guys on the team, sort of by my count, and I'm not counting JaVale McGee, bless his soul, or Kelvin Johnson. but like, you know, by my count, there are, you know, three guys probably who kind of have, like, a clear role for themselves that's not that different from what they do in the NBA. That's Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, and Drew Holiday. Like, those guys seem to be kind of doing on this team what they normally do. Not surprising, those are three kind of defensive-minded players. Offensively, it's tough. Guys have to sacrifice. Guys have to kind of find their spots. You know, Devin Booker's used to being a primary scorer. Zach LaVine's used to being a primary scorer. Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant. Like, these guys aren't used to playing with the kind of talent that they have. And like I said, this is always a challenge. That's not new. It's not new to this team per se. But I think under these circumstances, you know, where you've had this team disrupted multiple times. You've got a group of guys that it almost feels a little bit like these games have been imposed on them in some ways instead of the other way around. And then you just sort of add, like, just the chaotic nature of the tournament as a whole. Yeah, I think it's going to take some time for them to, like, really get cohesive. And, you know, normally in the past, their huge talent margins would make up for that. I don't think the talent margins are as wide.
Fox Sports Radio, Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon here live from Japan covering the games for the LA Times. At Dan Woike Sports, W-O-I-K-E is the surname. It's our buddy Dan Woike. Get the newsletter, subscribe, read all the updates he's got for you. I got two questions for you, Dan. One, one to lighten the mood, and the other is the story of the day. Can you go in and get everybody relaxed by reading them the Iron Sheik's Twitter feed?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no, this is going to be very exciting. Iranian legend, the Iron Sheik today, probably lots at stake. I'm going to guess he took the points. Give me my guess.
I'm going to guess you're right. But you know what?
He does
celebrate the U.S. every chance he gets. Obviously, the other story beyond what's wrong with USA basketball is everything Simone Biles. How is that resonating there?
I mean, I think, you know, players are really sympathetic. They understand the pressures and stuff that players are under and people are under and the demands and stuff like that. I think, you know, we saw Jason Tatum kind of take to Twitter to talk about it. It's, to me, the thing that I find most frustrating kind of with all of this and the conversations I've had with people is sort of like, I don't like who we're letting drive the conversations. Like what Simone Biles did was not an act of treachery by any stretch. And so responding to it like it was, I mean, the mental aspect of sports, especially on the Olympic stage, is a huge part of this, right? And you have to overcome the spotlight. You have to overcome the pressure. Like, the world is truly watching. And you do your best to compartmentalize that. But not everybody can. I mean, I think Damian Lillard looked really nervous, by the way, guys, in the opener. And you do see super high-level athletes kind of struggle with it. And that's sort of the nature of these games and the nature of these competitions. That's what they force you to stare that down. And, I mean, I think, I think it's interesting kind of to see Simone Biles, like, bring it to light. And obviously people don't fully understand it. We can judge that by the reaction. But it's definitely something everybody's talking about here. We'll see where it goes moving forward. The one thing I want to talk about, if I'm going to hijack the conversation for 2 seconds, is like we got to make 3-on-3 basketball a big thing in the U.S. It is so much fun, guys. I have to tell you, I loved it so much. The cast of characters out there is incredible. The U.S. women play tonight. I'm going. I'm very excited about it. My favorite team, the Italian 3-on-3 team, women's team, did not make it out of the quarterfinals. Their point guard is a 5-foot-nothing girl from Wisconsin who speaks perfect Italian, only she does it with, like, a Coen Brothers accent.
Wow.
Yeah. They asked her about, like, how the experience was, and she's like, bellissima. Like, it was like, oh, my gosh. It is like big top basketball, and they just beat the hell out of each other over there. You think there are no fouls in FIBA. Like, go watch 3-on-3. Like, I think I saw someone get clotheslined. Speaking of the Iron Sheik, he might be a good addition to the Iranian 3-on-3 team. It's just like, you know, he just has, like, James Harden in the camel clutch in the corner.
With the steel-toed boots, I mean, all he's got to do is, if he kicks out on a
loaded
jumper,
boot.
Forget it. I mean, he's going to wind up with bloody shins.
Yeah, no, I think it has been, though, I haven't been to that many things yet. My world will get bigger a little bit this week. That was so much fun. I sat there with Sports Illustrated's Greg Bishop, a veteran of the games, and he said that was the most fun he's had at an event in 3 Olympics. 3-on-3
Wow.
Basketball.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That was great. So watch it. It's nuts. It's fast. One of the games I covered had 4 lead changes in the final 20 seconds. Like,
about
a final.
That? I mean, Jason was trying to perpetrate that he could play handball at the Olympic level.
Oh, I'd be a good handball player. I like it. I wish I had trained for handball when I was a kid. I was made for that one.
It is like the Mexican fusion or Asian fusion of sports, right? Like, where it's just like, take a little bit of baseball, a little bit of football, a little bit of basketball, a little bit of soccer, and you mix them all together, and that's why we're so bad at it. Because all those other guys play those other sports, and it's just we're just going to send Jason instead. Yes. You might be our 10th best handball player.
Hey, one thing before we let you go, because this is something that I really feel a need to. One of the big things that stuck out for me the first few days. In water polo, there needs to be an underwater referee. Because all the fouls happen underwater, and they don't call any of them. I mean, people are getting gouged at underwater, but hey, up above the water, everything is fine. Underwater referees, and then water polo gets called correctly.
So I'll let you guys in on a little secret here. So that I'm going to water polo tomorrow and Friday to work on a story. I am fascinated, guys, by all the ways you can get kicked out of Olympic sports and, like, the names of set penalties, right? Like, in judo, for instance, if you break a rule, it's called a grave indifference, which seems like really dramatic.
That's
right?
That's awesome.
Wow.
Do you know what it's called? Do you know what it's called in water polo?
Oh, boy. What is it called?
A brutality.
That is fantastic. That's WWE finishing moves, man.
You committed a brutality.
I'm going to go out there and try to see if I can find some of the stories of the best water polo brutalities ever. Ever thrust upon Olympians, and we'll see how that goes.
I would buy that DVD, Dan. Make
hey,
that happen.
Call the LA Times. I'm going to get you an extra 1,000 words, okay?
Oh, man. It should be. Hopefully, I see some blood in the water. That'd be great.
You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Wojcicki Sports. That is at Dan Wojcicki Sports from the Tokyo Games with us. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the Iron Sheik. Enjoy water polo. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, guys. Well, after Iran wins by 10 and hits the money line, if you guys want to give me a call, I'll be around.
Sure.
See you, Dan.
You're not going to water polo. You're not going to 3-on-3. Oh,
can you wow, that's next level.
Take it easy, Dan. Enjoy it. A brutality.
And it's, look out, it's the grave indifference.